Sergeant. One of the grunts turned around. Chevrons on the tab in the center of his chest. 20 years younger than Reacher, at least. A whole different generation. The military police has no secret handshake, no magic word, and no real inclination to shoot the breeze with some ancient geezer, no matter who he might claim to have been one day long ago, way back when. The sergeant said,
"Sir, you need to step back 10 yards.
Reacher said, "That would be a hell of a long step, wouldn't it?" Two PFCs were hauling sawhorses out of a Humvee, A-shaped ends, and planks to fit between, marked no entry. Reacher said, "I'm guessing your orders are to keep people out of the woods, which is fine with me, knock yourselves out. But close observation of the terrain will reveal the woods start where the woods start, not a Humvee's length plus 10 yards down the street." The sergeant said,
"Who are you?"
"I'm a guy who once read the Constitution."
"This whole place is woods."
"So I noticed."
"So back off now."
"Unit?"
345th MP.
"Name?"
"Kane. Spelled C-A-I-N with no E."
"You, got a brother?"
Like I haven't heard that one before."
Reacher nodded. He said, "Carry on the good work, Sergeant." And he turned and walked away. He went back to the cabin rental office and rang the bell again. The old guy stepped up, creakily, and Reacher asked him, "Are my friends still here? The people I came in with? Henry something and Suzanne something?"
"They checked out early this morning."
"They didn't come back again?"
"They're gone, mister."
Reacher nodded and headed for his hut, where he spent the next 4 hours on the back deck, sitting in one lawn chair, his feet up on the other, watching the sky. It was another beautiful day, and he saw nothing except bright blue emptiness and wispy contrails arching way overhead, 8 miles up. In the early afternoon, he headed to the diner for a late lunch. He was the only customer. The town felt deserted. No trail, no business. The waitress didn't look happy. Not just about the lack of revenue. She was on the wall phone, listening to someone, concern on her face, a tale of woe, clearly. She hung up after a long minute and walked over to Reacher's table. She said,
"They're sending search parties south from Cripps for the walkers. They're grabbing them and hustling them out real fast."
Reacher said, "Soldiers?" She nodded.
"Lots of them."
"Weird."
"That's not the worst of it. They're holding them for questioning afterward. They want to know if they saw anything."
"Soldiers are doing that, too?"
"Men in suits. My friend thinks they're the FBI."
"Who's your friend?"
She works at the motel in Cripps."
"What are people supposed to have seen?"
"All we have is rumors. A bear gone rogue, maybe? A man-eater? Packs of wild coyotes, mountain lions, Bigfoot monsters, or some vicious murderer escaped from the penitentiary, or wolves, or vampires."
"You believe in vampires?"
"I watch the television, same as anyone else."
"It's not vampires," Reacher said.
"Well, there's something in those woods, mister."
Reacher ate a tuna melt, and drank coffee and water, and then he headed back to the arch for a second look. The sawhorses were in place, 10 yards upstream of the parked Humvees. Four grunts were standing easy, weapons shouldered. A show of force, no entry. Not a drill. Pleasant duty overall, given the season. Winter would have been much worse. Reacher walked back to town. Just as he hit Main Street, the colorless minivan came around the corner. Helen was at the wheel. She pulled over next to him and buzzed her window down. She said,
"Have you seen Henry and Suzanne?"
He said, "Not since breakfast time."
"People say the trail is closed?"
"It is."
"So I came to pick them up."
"Good luck with that."
"Where are they?"
"I think Henry is a hard man to dissuade."
"They went anyway?"
"That's my guess."
"After it was closed?"
There was a brief window of opportunity after the tape went up, before the soldiers arrived.
I heard about the soldiers.
What else have you heard?
There's something bad in the woods.
Vampires, maybe, Reacher said.
This isn't funny. I heard it might be escaped prisoners or rogue military units. Something very dangerous. Everyone is talking. It's on the local AM station. There are anchors in crypts already.
You want a cup of coffee?
Helen parked in front of the diner, and they went in together, to the same table Reacher had used before. The waitress brought coffee, and then hustled away, and got on the wall phone again, to her friend in Cripps, presumably, for updates and gossip and rumor. Helen said,
Henry is an idiot.
He likes the woods, Reacher said. Can't blame him for that.
But there's something in there now, obviously.
I guess there is.
Which he must have known. It's not brain surgery. He's an idiot, but he's not an idiot. But he went in anyway and dragged Suzanne in with him. He is an idiot, both sorts.
Suzanne could have said no.
Actually, she's just as bad. No impulse control. I heard they have search parties moving south from Cripps.
Reacher nodded. I heard that, too, straight from the horse's mouth. Or slightly second-hand, I suppose. Our waitress has a friend up there.
What are they searching for?
People like Henry and Suzanne. They're getting them out and asking questions about what they saw.
But they'll miss Henry and Suzanne, won't they? It's inevitable. They're expecting a 3-day pipeline. They'll stop when they get all the people who started out yesterday morning. Henry and Suzanne will be 24 hours behind them. They'll leave them in there, with whatever else is in there. This is not good.
It's a big woods.
The thing could be roaming and hunting. Or, if it's escaped prisoners, they'll stick close to the trail anyway. They would have to. Henry and Suzanne will be in there alone with them.
Reacher said, It's not escaped prisoners.
How do you know?
I went to see the soldiers at the Arch. They're military police, like I was. But technically what they're doing isn't entirely kosher. The military can't perform civilian law enforcement duties. There are all kinds of rules about that. But their sergeant told me his unit number with no hesitation at all. And then he told me his name just as fast. He even spelled it out for me, Kane, with no E.
What does all that mean?
It means he's not afraid of anything. So he can get right in my face. Which means he has a solid gold get-out-of-jail-free card. Which must be urgent orders from somewhere very high up. From an unimpeachable source. As in, if some citizen like me makes a fuss, I'm going to get crushed by the machine. He's going to get a medal. Which makes this a national security issue. It's showing all the signs. And people escaped from the penitentiary isn't national security. That's a state affair.
Helen was quiet for a second. Then she said, "A national security issue could be a rogue military unit, or a band of terrorists, or escaped prisoners from Homeland Security, or some kind of mutant has gotten free, like a genetic experiment, or someone else's genetic experiment set free on purpose. Maybe this is an attack, and they're right there in it."
"It's none of the above," Reacher said.
"How do you know?"
"Because I sat in a chair all morning and watched the sky."
"Which told you what?"
"No circling spotter planes, no drones, no helicopters. If they were hunting a warm-blooded creature, or creatures, they'd have been up there all day with heat-seeking cameras and air-to-ground radar and whatever other fancy things they have now."
"So what do you think they're looking for?"
"They aren't looking. I told you that. No aerial surveillance."
"Then what aren't they looking for?"
"Something with no heat signature, and too small to show up on radar."
"Which would be what?"
"I have no idea."
"But something they don't want us to see, obviously. Something we can't know about."
"Evidently."
"It could be a cold-blooded creature, like a snake."
"Or a vampire. Are they cold-blooded?"
"This isn't funny. But okay, maybe it's not a creature at all. Maybe it's a piece of secret equipment. Inert, somehow."
"Possibly."
"How did it get in there?"
"That's a great question," Reacher said. "I think it must have fallen off an airplane."
They got refills of coffee, and Helen worried away at the problem in her mind, and eventually she said, "This is very bad indeed."
Reacher said, "Not really. Henry and Suzanne don't have much to fear from a piece of inert equipment. It's not going to jump up and bite them in the ass."
"But it is. That's exactly what it's going to do, figuratively speaking. They're in the woods illegally, 24 hours behind anyone else. That looks secretive, like their job is to find the thing and smuggle it out. Suppose it's a bomb or a missile. That happens, right? Bombs and missiles fall off airplanes. Accidentally, sometimes, right? I read it in a book. But more likely, deliberately. Like it's one big conspiracy. What do we do if Henry and Suzanne are taken to be the designated retrieval party? It wouldn't take much imagination. They sneak in through the tape. They're all alone in a deserted 24-hour time window. Their job is to grab the missile ahead of your government and pass it on down the chain until one day an airliner comes down at JFK and it's 9/11 all over again.
Henry and Suzanne are hikers, wilderness enthusiasts. It's the summer vacation. They're Canadians, for God's sake.
What does that mean?
Nicest people in the world. Almost as good as being Swiss.
But whatever, they'll check them out.
Names and numbers in a couple of databases. Nearest thing to doing nothing at all.
Suzanne has history.
Reacher said, "What kind?"
"She's a lovely person. You have to understand that. She has sympathy for everybody."
"Is that a problem?"
Helen said, "Of course it is, because everybody means everybody, plain English, which means if you focus the spotlight one particular way, you can see sympathies going where your country doesn't want them to go, out of context and more than balanced by other things elsewhere, and not at all fair, but facts are facts."
Reacher said nothing.
Helen said, "And she's very passionate politically and very active."
"How active is very active?"
"It's what she does, like a job. Henry runs the bike shop on his own most of the time."
"So she's in more than a couple of databases. A couple hundred, at least."
"Red flagged in most of them, probably. I mean, she's not Che Guevara or Chairman Mao, but computer memory is very cheap these days, and they have to fill it up with something. She's in the top million, I'm sure. And I'm equally sure they have pre-programmed responses ready. The screens will light up like a Christmas tree, and she'll be hauled off to Egypt or Syria. She'll be in the system.
They might let her come home in a year or so, all weird and slightly off, if she lives through it.
Reacher said, "It might not be a missile. It might be some boring black box full of coded data. Maybe it fell off a satellite, not an airplane. No possible use to anyone else, which makes the idea of a retrieval party insane to them. They're not going to be chasing shadows. If they see Henry and Suzanne coming around the corner, dressed like hikers, walking like hikers, and sounding like hikers, then they're going to call them hikers. They're going to give them a drink of water and send them on their way.
You can't be sure of that.
It's one of a number of possibilities.
What are all the others?
I guess some of them could come uncomfortably close to the kind of thing you're worried about.
How many of them?
Practically all of them, really. Bottom line is, she's a foreign national with a history in the middle of a national security lockdown.
Helen said,
"We have to go get them out."
Resistance was futile. Reacher knew that right away. He was a realistic man, a stoic, in the original meaning of the name. A guy who accepted circumstances for what they were and didn't seek to change them. He asked,
"How fast do they walk?"
Helen said,
"Not very. They're communing, not commuting. They're stepping off the path and making footprints in the virgin earth. They're looking at everything. They're listening to the birds and the wind in the trees. We should be able to catch up to them."
"Better to get ahead of them."
"How?"
They started in the diner's kitchen, where the bewildered day guy gave up two machete-like weapons, cleavers, possibly for cutting meat. Then they hustled down to the kayak dock and rented a slim two-place vessel. It was bright orange in color. It had waterproof fabric around the seat holes, to tie around the rower's waist, Reacher figured, like wearing the boat like a pair of pants, to stop water getting in, which he thought was overkill on a fine day in August, on an inland body of water about as placid as a mill pond. Reacher took the back seat. It was a tight fit. Helen looked better in the front. The rental guy let go of a rope and they paddled away, chaotic at first, then getting better, much better. All about building up a rhythm. Long, steady, propulsive strokes, like swimming, but faster than swimming, faster than walking, too. Certainly faster than communing and putting prints in the virgin earth and listening to birds. Maybe twice as fast, maybe more, which was good. The lake turned like a crooked come-on finger, which gave them a natural outflanking maneuver, at first running parallel to the trail, and then cutting up and in, all the way to the far end of the finger, right to where the nail would be, which would be as near the trail as they could hope to get. Because after the turn, the lake dug into the woods, just like Maine itself dug into Canada, like a blade, like a knife wound. The far tip might dump them just a couple hundred yards from the path itself, a quarter mile maximum. The primeval part of the forest was not wide at that location, because of the water, like a bay, like a river estuary. They paddled on. Not a sprint, a middle-distance race. The mile, maybe. Black-and-white film of skinny gentlemen pounding around cinder tracks, baggy white shirts, grimaces, digging in, enduring. The machetes were between Reacher's feet. They slid backward and forward, with the pulse of every stroke. The far tip of the finger was a rocky V, tied up against tree trunks, which made it easy to steady the ship prior to getting out. There were handholds everywhere. But it made it hard to move more than a foot ashore. It was all about squeezing through, leading with one shoulder, leading with the other, being careful with the trailing foot, like crossing a crowded room at a party, except with statues instead of people, all of them as solid as iron. And not in candlelight, but in a strange green glow from the bright sun behind a billion still and silent leaves. And any wider clearing was no real bonus either, because they were all tangled with vines and brambles, which to some extent could be blundered through, but 9 times out of 10, the machetes were needed, in the last yard or two, to release ankles all snarled up and fresh out of momentum. Reacher asked, "You okay?" Helen answered, "In what way?"
You don't like the woods.
You want to take 3 wild-ass guesses as to why? As in, right now, this minute?
They pressed on, Reacher leading, making a big hole in the vegetation, Helen coming through it close behind, both of them making prints where maybe no human had ever walked before. And then they sensed rather than saw the trail up ahead, a slit, a discontinuity, an absence, a hole in the woodland sounds, a change in the sky, a seam in the canopy. And then they came upon it, stepping over gnarled trunks, bent like knees, turning, squeezing, and finally falling out on what was, literally, the beaten track. The air above it was damp and still, and noticeably cool. Helen said,
"So, are we ahead of them?"
"I think so," Reacher said. "For sure, if they're sightseeing. Maybe not, if something spooked them and they hustled. But I'm pretty sure we made it. And when it comes to speculation, I'm a very cautious man."
"So we wait here?"
"The most efficient use of our time would be to move and meet them head on. By definition, we'd turn them around closer to Naismith than here."
"We might be walking away from them."
"Life's a gamble, I guess."
"It was a spooky situation from the start. Maybe they were hustling all the way, just to be able to say they'd done the miles. They could have passed here 30 minutes ago."
"I'm guessing they didn't hustle. They seemed really into this stuff. I think they're strolling slow, stopping all the time, looking at this and that, all on their own. It's just them and the forest. I say they're 30 minutes in front of us."
"You've done this kind of thing before, right?"
"From time to time."
"Did you get them right?"
"Some of them."
She took a breath and said,
"Okay, we'll hope to meet them head on. And if we don't, I'm going to call you some very un-Canadian names, some with several syllables."
"Sticks and stones," Reacher said.
"I'll go first," she said.
The trail was much easier underfoot, and it was a straight shot, with no twisting or dodging, which meant they could pay a little attention to things more than a foot and a half away, of which there were many, and which in the end slowed them down more than the tripwire brambles, because there was a lot to look at. Primeval was the right word. Not necessarily Reacher's thing, but he couldn't deny some sense of primitive connection. It could have been that 100 generations of his ancestors had lived in the woods. They had to live somewhere. The trees were spotty with lichen, and smooth with light green moss, and they bent and twisted and jostled for light and space, and the gloomy shapes they made seemed to talk just faintly, like a distant hum.
"Perfect ambush location ahead and left, so take care. Two defensive positions ahead and right, so plan to use the first, with the second to fall back on if necessary."
100 generations, and, by definition, all of them survived. They walked on, through cool air, like cellar air, still and damp and undisturbed. The trail itself was soft and springy, a dark, leaf-rich loam, like carpet. No hikers up ahead. Not in the first 5 minutes, or the first 10, which made each new minute more and more likely. Two couples, on exactly opposite vectors, one moving fast, one moving slow. 15 minutes already gone. The window in which the encounter would have to take place was getting smaller and smaller. If it was going to happen, it was going to happen soon. It didn't. Not in the next 5 minutes or the next 10. Which was getting arithmetically difficult. It was hard to imagine Henry and Suzanne could be slow enough to make the big numbers work, unless they had chickened out and turned around, straight back to Naismith. Second thoughts, maybe, and an honorable retreat. They might have stepped out behind Sergeant Kane at the exact same moment Reacher and Helen had paddled away from the kayak dock. No way of knowing. No hikers up ahead. Helen said, "Reacher, you blew it." He said, "Start with the polysyllabic examples. I'm always interested." She said, "Maybe something already happened to them." "But what? There are no search parties coming north out of Naismith. No other hikers. The missing equipment is not jumping up and biting them in the ass. Not actually. You can say so later, figuratively. But so far, nothing much can have happened to them."
"Then where are they?"
"They must be static. Maybe they pitched their tent already. Maybe they found the perfect spot."
"I think they hustled, and we missed them. I think we came in behind them. You blew the call."
"Life's a gamble," Reacher said again.
They moved on, speeding up a little, ignoring the sylvan glades to their left and right, every one of them a separate curiosity, like a room in a museum. There was a new breeze high above them, and the canopy was rustling, and tree limbs were clicking and groaning. Small, furtive animals made darting sounds in the underbrush. Insects hung in tight clouds, to be avoided if possible, or batted through if not. Then the trail jinked right and left, around a huge mossy bowl, 4 feet wide, and up ahead in the gloom, they saw two bright objects stacked side by side on the forest floor, red and orange and yellow. Nylon, straps, and buckles. Backpacks.
"Theirs," Helen said.
Reacher nodded at her side. He had seen the backpacks before, most recently at the Wilderness Arch that morning, hoisted into place and ready to go. They walked on and stopped next to the luggage. It was not abandoned. Both packs were set upright, leaning one on the other. They had been carefully placed.
"They stepped off the trail," Reacher said. "A little side excursion. No point hauling bags through the brush."
"When?"
Helen said.
"Recently, I hope, which would mean they're close by."
Behind the click and the hum of the living woods, there was nothing but silence all around. No gasps, no calls, no feet ripping through the tangled undergrowth. Nothing. Helen said,
"Should we shout?"
Reacher said,
"Not too loud."
"Henry? Suzanne?"
She said their names like a fierce stage whisper, louder than talking but far from yelling, with an anxious, questioning cadence rising on the ends. No response.
"Suzanne? Henry?"
No response. She said,
"They can't be far away, surely."
Reacher studied the brush to the left and the right. Logic said if they had stepped off the trail, they would have done so near their bags. No sense in stacking the packs and then choosing an exit point 100 yards away, so Reacher knew where to start looking. But he was no kind of an expert tracker, not out in the wilds,
Not like the movies where the guy squats down on his haunches and ponders a moment and says, "They passed this way 3 hours ago, and the woman has a blister on her ankle." But there were broken shoots and torn leaves in one location, easy enough to imagine a planted foot, and the sweep of a short, cautious stride, and the next foot, and a second person following behind, leading with one shoulder, then leading with the other, squeezing through the gaps. Helen said, "Should we try it?" Reacher said, "Call their names again."
"Henry? Suzanne? Where are you?"
No response, no echo off the trees. Reacher pushed his way into the brush, scanning ahead, looking for disturbances, for kicked twigs, for sap oozing from crushed stalks. It was an inexact process. In most places, there was no obvious new direction to follow. He was forced to stop every few yards and examine a whole arc ahead of him, and choose the least worst possibility from among a number of equally plausible angles. He figured rabbits and other small animals could sweep blades of grass aside just as easily as a brushing foot, but only human weight could break anything thicker than a pencil, so he based his guesses on the presence or absence of bright new wood on the inside faces of busted twigs. On and on, like an algorithm, yes and no, and no and yes, deeper into the woods. Every 10 yards they stopped and listened, the backs of their brains filtering out the normal sounds and scanning for the abnormal, but hearing nothing, not on the first stop or the second or the third. But fourth time around, Reacher felt he could sense held breath nearby, a tense human vibe, which the ancient part of his mind interpreted as either predator or prey, and therefore of interest either way. 100 generations, and they all survived. Then he heard a tiny sound, halfway between a wheezing click and a whirring crunch, all spiky with tiny squeaks and whistles and mechanical resonances, and bathed in faint but cavernous echo, like a Nikon camera, but not really. An electronic imitation, reedy and insubstantial, a cell phone, taking a picture. And another. Reacher pushed on, stepping high to keep clear of vines, squeezing through gaps, and then, suddenly, seeing Henry and Suzanne standing shoulder to shoulder not 10 feet from him, looking down, taking cell phone snaps of the thing on the ground in front of them.
"No heat signature, and too small to show up on radar."
That was for damn sure. It was a dead human. A man. Small, dark-skinned, lean and ascetic, in old orange prison garb. He was on his back,
and the angle of his neck and his limbs made no kind of anatomical sense. He looked soft inside, almost liquid, as if his bones were smashed and his organs crushed. Reacher said,
"He fell out of an airplane. Not off an airplane, exactly. Out, through the door. Way high up. So he blacks out, because he has no oxygen. Or maybe the sudden cold gives him a heart attack right then and there. But either way, he falls like a rag doll, and he smashes through the canopy, and he hits the forest floor, where he's DOA, for sure. The canopy bounces back, so there's nothing to see from above, and he's cooling fast, down to ambient temperature, so the infrared can't find him, and as far as radar is concerned, he looks exactly like a tree root or a little pile of broken branches."
Suzanne said, "I hope he had the heart attack from the cold."
Reacher said, "The question is, did he jump or was he pushed?"
"He jumped."
"Who is he?"
"He's a Canadian citizen. He was supposed to come down in Toronto, but he missed."
"And who are you?"
"Just another Canadian citizen."
"Who are the pictures for?"
"His family."
"Who is he?" Reacher asked again.
"I see both sides,"
Suzanne said.
"I would do anything to stop another attack, but it's getting insane now. They fly these guys from Guantanamo to Egypt and Syria, where they get a good working over. And after a while, the ones who survive have to come back, because the Egyptians and the Syrians can't have them hanging about forever. But you don't want them back, because what are you going to do with them? Guantanamo is always full, and you can't just say never mind and let them go, because they've all got stories to tell."
"So what do they do with them? And tell me how you know."
"There's a network for people of conscience, way down in the dark web. Certain facts are established. Your ground crews bypassed a couple of fail-safes and made it possible to open the airplane door during flight, at very low speeds and very low altitudes, mostly over the far North Atlantic, in the radar shadows, where they would come down low and slow and open the hatch. That's what they do with them. Problem solved."
"So?"
"So word gets around, and this guy knows he's either going to die under torture or get thrown out of the plane on the way home. There's no happy ending here. So he decides to jump the door on the outward flight, to take them by surprise, somewhere over Toronto, to make a statement. A sympathetic foreign press, a chance to apply some external pressure."
Reacher nodded, like a thumb up Canada's ass. Toronto wasn't very far away. He said,
"What went wrong?"
"Not very much. They have access to information and experts of every kind. They knew the route, which never changes, and they knew the timing. It's just a question of counting the minutes in your head and then going for it, which I guess can't ever be totally accurate. Although he trained for months, and a gust of headwind counts for a lot, I suppose. Small errors multiply."
"Who are the pictures for?" Reacher asked again.
"His family. There's nothing else to be done. None of this exists on paper. The denials would be instant and convincing. They'd say the photos were faked. Low green light, a little grainy, foreign radicals with a bike shop. The whole thing wouldn't last a day."
"Would it have lasted longer in Toronto?"
"They thought so. Cities and suburbs are different. There are lots of witnesses and cops and TV. Things don't go away so easily. They thought it could be a watershed moment."
"You seem to know a lot about how they think."
"I try to learn how everyone thinks. It's the key to understanding. And not that this was some innocent sweetheart. He was a thug, straight from the Middle Ages. He was a vicious killer. I was glad he was jumping out of the plane. But he had already told them what he knew, and they were sending him anyway, just out of habit. It's insane now."
"How did you know where to look?"
"Post-game analysis from the experts."
"Why you?"
"We were closest."
"Out of how many choices?"
"Many.
including Helen?
Helen said, Of course.
Henry said, It was her idea to pick you up and bring you along. At least that way we'd get an American witness. You've seen it now. You can't unsee it.
Reacher said, We need to get back to Naismith.
But they didn't make it far, not as a group. They retraced their steps. It was easy to follow Reacher's blundering trail in reverse. Then 30 yards short of the path, he heard noises ahead, and he saw a blink of movement through the trunks. He held out his hand in warning, and Suzanne and Helen and Henry froze behind him. He crept on without them, leaning rather than moving, straining forward, peering ahead. 4 guys in ACUs, one of which was Sergeant Kane. They were all staring at the backpacks, carefully placed, one leaning on the other. Reacher eased back, and they all 4 ducked their heads together, and he whispered, Stay in the woods another 100 yards. Loop around, hit the trail south of them, and then leg it. Jump in the van and head straight for home. Best of luck all the way. Don't come back again.
They all shook hands, and the 3 of them moved off, and Reacher waited. He gave them 3 minutes, and then he moved toward the 4 soldiers as noisily as possible, brushing things and snapping things at every opportunity. They heard him 10 yards out, and they turned as one, and their M16s came up, and Reacher heard 4 quiet snicks as 4 fire selectors were turned up a notch. Clean, precise sounds, hard and real, not like the phony photo shutter. He said,
Long guns are a poor choice in the woods, Sergeant Kane. You can aim all you want, but there's always going to be a tree in the way. That's your first mistake. Let's hope it's also your last.
Kane called back,
Are those people with you?
Which people?
The infiltrators.
They were hikers from Canada. I haven't seen them since this morning.
I don't believe you.
Let it go, Sergeant. Play it smart. There are no medals in this one. By tomorrow morning, it won't have happened at all.
They might have seen evidence of a covert operation.
They saw what they're supposed to see.
Kane said,
What does that mean?
Like a magician on stage, Reacher said. A big showy flourish with the left hand, attracting all the attention while the right hand does the real work. There are activists in the world, Sergeant Kane. We can't wish them away. They're always looking for something to piss and moan about. So we give them something. A big, showy flourish with the left hand. Something to get all agitated about. But not too agitated, because after all, who really gives a shit about vicious killers straight out of the Middle Ages? Meanwhile, the right hand does the important stuff, undisturbed. Classic misdirection.
Who are you?
I was an MP once. I was your boss's boss's boss. And my brother did a spell in military intelligence. I met some of his people. Some sly minds there, Sergeant. There was an old guy called O'Day. A buck gets 10. This scheme is one of his. Well, think about it. Hundreds of people. A secret website. All kinds of planning and scheming. It's an energy sink. Like a sponge. It keeps them where we can see them.
No answer.
Let it go, Sergeant, Reacher said again. Play your part, which is to look sinister next to your Humvees. No one's going to thank you if you screw up your lines. These things are very carefully orchestrated.
Then Reacher stepped back and shut up and let Kane's career caution do his work for him. After a minute, Kane gave the word, and all 4 of them formed up and jogged back the way they had come. Reacher followed 5 minutes behind them, but he took the precaution of looping the last 100 yards through the brush and coming out on a parallel street. 2 minutes later, he was back at the welcome board, waiting for a ride out of town.
Maybe they have a tradition.
It started on a freezing Christmas Eve night in New York City, in a bar on Bleecker Street in the West Village. Jack Reacher walked by, huddled in his coat collar, and he heard the thump of interesting rhythms inside. He pushed through the door into warmth and noise and found a saxophone player and two sidemen up on a stage about the height of an orange box. But more importantly, he found a blonde woman alone at a table for two. She was following the music. Turned out she was from Holland. She was about 30 and over 6 feet tall. They talked when the band took a break. She spoke English very well. She was a cabin attendant for KLM, which was the Royal Dutch Airlines. She said she couldn't chat for long. In fact, she had to leave in 20 minutes exactly. The crew bus was coming by. She was working the night flight to Amsterdam. They talked some more, and after 20 minutes exactly, she asked him to come with her to Amsterdam. No charge. She had a coupon. Like a staff benefit. It was Christmas Eve. There would be empty seats. Reacher said yes. He had no particular place to go, and all the time in the world to get there. Christmas Day in Amsterdam would be fine. He had his passport in one pocket, and his folding toothbrush in another, and his ATM card, and a wad of cash in a third. All he needed. As ever, he was ready to go. They got to the airport, and she was called into an emergency pre-flight briefing, and that was about the last he ever saw of her. The problem was a snowstorm. It was due to roll over the United Kingdom and then hit the coast of Europe, including Amsterdam. But not yet. The plane could probably beat it home, but it didn't. The storm sped up unexpectedly. It blanketed Britain and headed onward, while high over the Atlantic, the airplane passed its point of no return. The computer said it was due into Schiphol exactly when the weather front would be at its worst. It would have to divert. It would have to stop short, on a runway already snowed upon and already cleared. Best offer was a place called Stansted, in England, in the county of Essex. Reacher saw his new friend hustle by in the distance, and another attendant told him the plan. She said his friend was sorry, but she would have to stay with the plane. He was on his own for Christmas. Reacher was through the Stansted airport before 6 o'clock in the morning, Christmas Day. It was well before dawn, and still dark as night. There was one cab on the rank. The driver wore a turban. Reacher asked him what lay round about. The guy said a town called Harlow in one direction, and a town called Chelmsford in another, and Cambridge, about twice as far away to the north.
Cambridge, Reacher said.
He had been there on U.S. Army business back in the day. It had a university and air bases nearby, which he might need. His KLM coupon was one way only. England was a fine country, but he couldn't stay in one place forever.
Roads are very bad, sir, the driver said. We won't make it to Cambridge.
How much snow?
2 feet in places.
You got here this morning, Reacher said. Let's try for Cambridge.
They set off, and did pretty well for the first 20 miles, all the way to the middle of nowhere. Then their luck ran out. The wind had smoothed the snow over roads and walls into glittering, crusted shapes that bore no relation to what lay beneath. The driver said,
I'm turning back.
It was still dark. All around was snow. In the far distance was a light. A house, maybe. An upper floor window. A bulb left on all night. Maybe 2 miles away. All on its own. A country residence. Reacher said,
You can let me out here.
Are you kidding?
I don't like to turn back. I prefer to keep moving forward, as a matter of principle.
No cars will come. You'll be stuck here all day. You'll freeze to death.
I could walk. There's a house in the distance. Maybe a stately home. I could knock on the kitchen door. Maybe they have a tradition. I could get Christmas dinner below stairs. A cup of coffee, at least.
Are you serious?
Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
So eventually the taxi drove away, leaving Reacher all alone in the landscape. He stood in the dark for a moment,
and then he set out walking, knee-deep through the drifts, some crusty, some powder, which exploded around him as he blundered through. There was a wind blowing, laced with eddies of snow. He found a road surface under his feet and stuck with it, and saw it was going to lead him to the corner of a high estate wall, built of stone and powdered with snow. The road led along it for about half a mile to what looked like a pair of fancy iron gates between tall stone pillars topped with carved statues of lions or mythical beasts. In the pre-dawn gloom, it was hard to tell. He slogged onward, one plunging stride at a time, and he made it to the gates, which were standing open, knee-deep in snow. There was a long driveway ahead, buried in untouched white, running between avenues of bare trees straight to the house, 100 yards or more. No tracks, no footprints. Reacher was going to be the first visitor of the day. The gates had wrought iron words welded in as part of the design. On the left-hand gate was Trout, and on the right was Hall, the name of the house. There were more lights showing in the front windows, regular yellow bulbs upstairs and twinkling reds and greens below, Christmas decorations lit up all night. Reacher set off down the driveway, stepping high, a yard at a time, clumsily. At the bottom of every step, he felt frozen gravel underfoot. He was hungry. He hoped the cook was in a good mood, which was never guaranteed. He had seen TV shows from Britain about country houses. Sometimes the cooks reacted badly to unexpected circumstances. He made it to the house. It was a big old pile made of stone. The kitchen door was presumably around the back, through more deep snow, whereas the front door was right here, and it had an iron bell-pull handle. Reacher pulled the handle. He heard a faint, sonorous bong inside, and then hurrying feet, and the door was flung open. A woman looked out. She was maybe 50. She looked rich. She was wearing a formal dress, black velvet. She looked like she had been up all night. She looked like a difficult person. She said,
"Thank goodness. Are you the doctor or the policeman?"
Reacher said, "Neither."
"Then who are you?"
"My taxi turned back because of the snow. I was hoping to get a cup of coffee."
"Taxi? To where?"
"Cambridge."
"Impossible."
"Apparently. Merry Christmas, anyway." The woman stared at him. The moment of decision. He was not an ideal house guest at first glance. He was a huge guy, all bone and muscle, not particularly good-looking and not very well-dressed. The woman said,
"Did you see the doctor or the policeman out there anywhere?"
He said, "I didn't see anyone. Do you have a problem?"
"I suppose you'd better come in."
She backed away into the gloom inside, and Reacher followed her, to a hallway the size of a basketball court. There was a Christmas tree at least 10 feet tall, and a staircase at least 10 feet wide. The woman said,
"Are you sure you're not a policeman?"
"I was once," Reacher said, "in the army, but not anymore."
"Our army?"
"The U.S. Army."
"I should introduce you to the colonel, my husband."
"Why do you need a policeman and a doctor?"
"Because someone stole my diamond pendant, and my stepdaughter is upstairs having a baby."
"On her own?"
"It's the Christmas holiday. The staff left yesterday, before the snow. There's no one here."
"Apart from you and the colonel."
"I don't know anything about babies. I've never had any. I'm only her stepmother. I telephoned for her doctor almost 4 hours ago, and the police at the same time. I thought you must be at least one of them."